The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
This is Margaret Dixon on Page Turners at 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield. We are continuing to read The House on the Borderland by William Hope Hodgson, and crazy stuff continues to happen here with our unnamed narrator. So let's get to it. The Swine Things. It was evening a week later. My sister sat in the garden knitting. I was walking up and down reading. My gun leant up against the wall of the house, for since the advent of that strange thing in the gardens, I had deemed it wise to take precautions. Yet, through the whole week, there had been nothing to alarm me, either by sight or sound, so that I was able to look back calmly to the incident, though still with a sense of unmitigated wonder and curiosity. I was, as I have just said, walking up and down, and somewhat engrossed in my book. Suddenly, I heard a crash away in the direction of the pit. With a quick movement, I turned and saw a tremendous column of dust rising high into the evening air. My sister had risen to her feet with a sharp exclamation of surprise and fright. Telling her to stay where she was, I snatched up my gun and ran towards the pit. As I neared it, I heard a dull, rumbling sound that grew quickly into a roar, split with deeper crashes, and up from the pit drove a fresh volume of dust. The noise ceased, though the dust still rose tumultuously. I reached the edge and looked down, but could see nothing save a boil of dust cloud swirling hither and thither. The air was so full of the small particles that they blinded and choked me. And, finally, I had to run out from the smother to breathe. Gradually, the suspended matter sank and hung in a panoply over the mouth of the pit. I could only guess at what had happened. That there had been a landslip of some kind, I had little doubt. But the cause was beyond my knowledge, and yet, even then, I had half imaginings. For already the thought had come to me of those falling rocks and that thing in the bottom of the pit. But in the first minutes of confusion, I failed to reach the natural conclusion to which the catastrophe pointed. Slowly the dust subsided, until presently I was able to approach the edge and look down. For a while I peered impotently, trying to see through the reek. At first it was impossible to make out anything. Then, as I stared, I saw something below to my left that moved. I looked intently towards it, and presently made out another, and then another. Three dim shapes that appeared to be climbing up the side of the pit. I could see them only indistinctly. Even as I stared and wondered, I heard a rattle of stones somewhere to my right. I glanced across but could see nothing. I leant forward and peered over and down into the pit just beneath where I stood, and saw no further than a hideous, white swine face that had risen to within a couple of yards of my feet. Below it, I could make out several others. As the thing saw me, it gave a sudden, uncouth squeal, which was answered from all parts of the pit. At that, a gust of horror and fear took me, and bending down, I discharged my gun right into its face. Straight away, the creature disappeared with a clatter of loose earth and stones. There was a momentary silence, to which probably I owe my life, for during it I heard a quick patter of many feet, and turning sharply saw a troop of the creatures coming towards me at a run. Instantly I raised my gun and fired at the foremost, who plunged headlong with a hideous howling. Then I turned to run. More than halfway from the house to the pit, I saw my sister. She was coming towards me. I could not see her face distinctly as the dusk had fallen, but there was fear in her voice as she called to know why I was shooting. Run, I shouted in reply. Run for your life. Without more ado, she turned and fled, picking up her skirts with both hands. As I followed, I gave a glance behind. The brutes were running on their hind legs, at times dropping on all fours. I think it must have been the terror in my voice that spurred Mary to run so, for I feel convinced that she had not, as yet, seen those hell creatures that pursued. On we went, my sister leading. Each moment, the nearing sounds of the footsteps told me that the brutes were gaining on us rapidly. Fortunately, I am accustomed to live, in some ways, an active life. As it was, the strain of the race was beginning to tell severely upon me. Ahead, I could see the back door. Luckily, it was open. I was some half dozen yards behind Mary now, and my breath was sobbing in my throat. Then something touched my shoulder. I wrenched my head round quickly and saw one of those monstrous pallid faces close to mine. One of the creatures, having outrun its companions, had almost overtaken me. Even as I turned, it made a fresh grab. With a sudden effort, I sprang to one side and, swinging my gun by the barrel, brought it crashing down upon the foul creature's head. The thing dropped with an almost human groan. Even this short delay had been nearly sufficient to bring the rest of the brutes down upon me, so that, without an instant's waste of time, I turned and ran for the door. Reaching it, I burst into the passage, then turning quickly, slammed and bolted the door, just as the first of the creatures rushed against it with a sudden shock. My sister sat gasping in a chair. She seemed in a fainting condition, but I had no time then to spend on her. I had to make sure that all the doors were fastened. Fortunately, they were. The one leading from my study into the gardens was the last to which I went. I had just had time to note that it was secured when I thought I heard a noise outside. I stood perfectly silent and listened. Yes, now I could distinctly hear a sound of whispering, and something slithered over the panels with a rasping, scratchy noise. Evidently, some of the brutes were feeling with their claw hands about the door to discover whether there were any means of ingress. That the creature should so soon have found the door was, to me, a proof of their reasoning capabilities. It assured me that they must not be regarded by any means as mere animals. I had felt something of this before when that first thing peered in through my window. Then I had applied the term superhuman to it with an almost instinctive knowledge that the creature was something different from the brute beast. Something beyond human, yet in no good sense, but rather as something foul and hostile to the great and good and humanity. In a word, as something intelligent and yet inhuman. The very thought of the creatures filled me with revulsion. Now I bethought me of my sister, and going to the cupboard, I got out a flask of brandy and a wine glass. Taking these, I went down to the kitchen, carrying a lighted candle with me. She was not sitting in the chair, but had fallen out and was lying upon the floor, face downwards. Very gently, I turned her over and raised her head somewhat. Then I poured a little of the brandy between her lips. After a while, she shivered slightly. A little later, she gave several gasps and opened her eyes. In a dreamy, unrealizing way, she looked at me. Then her eyes closed slowly, and I gave her a little more of the brandy. For perhaps a minute longer, she lay silent, breathing quickly. All at once, her eyes opened again, and it seemed to me as I looked that the pupils were dilated, as though fear had come with returning consciousness. Then, with a movement so unexpected that I started backwards, she sat up. Noticing that she seemed giddy, I put out my hand to steady her. At that, she gave a loud scream and, scrambling to her feet, ran from the room. For a moment, I stayed there, kneeling and holding the brandy flask. I was utterly puzzled and astonished. Could she be afraid of me? But no, why should she? I could only conclude that her nerves were badly shaken and that she was temporarily unhinged. Upstairs, I heard a door bang loudly, and I knew that she had taken refuge in her room. I put the flask down on the table. My attention was distracted by a noise in the direction of the back door. I went towards it and listened. It appeared to be shaken, as though some of the creatures struggled with it silently, but it was far too strongly constructed and hung to be easily moved. Out in the gardens rose a continuous sound. It might have been mistaken, by a casual listener, for the grunting and squealing of a herd of pigs. But as I stood there, it came to me that there was sense and meaning to all those swinish noises. Gradually, I seemed to be able to trace a semblance in it to human speech, glutinous and sticky as though each articulation were made with difficulty. Yet, nevertheless, I was becoming convinced that it was no mere medley of sounds, but a rapid interchange of ideas. By this time, it had grown quite dark in the passages, and from these came all the varied cries and groans of which the old house is so full after nightfall. It is, no doubt, because things are then quieter, and one has more leisure to hear. Also, there may be something in the theory that the sudden change of temperature at sundown affects the structure of the house somewhat, causing it to contract and settle, as it were, for the night. However, this as may be, but on that night in particular, I would gladly have been quit of so many eerie noises. It seemed to me that each crack and creak was the coming of one of those things along the dark corridors, though I knew in my heart that this could not be, for I had seen myself that all the doors were secure. Gradually, however, these sounds grew on my nerves to such an extent that, were it only to punish my cowardice, I felt I must make the round of the basement again, and if anything were there, face it. And then I would go up to my study, for I knew sleep was out of the question, with the house surrounded by creatures, half beasts, half something else, and entirely unholy.
Well, things are starting to pick up. Let's see where this takes us, but first, a message from our sponsor.
Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield. 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, ucpwma.org/jobs.
Have you ever dreamed of being a radio DJ, spinning your favorite vinyl, CDs, and MP3s? Have you ever wanted to share conversations with interesting guests with the community? Then the WTBR-FM Programming Committee wants to hear from you. We are now accepting proposals for new programs. For more information, visit WTBRFM.com or call 445-4234. Pittsfield Community Radio, for the love of radio.
Hi, it's Jen Glockner. I'm the director of the Office of Cultural Development for the wonderful city of Pittsfield, and I also host the Cultural Pittsfield Radio Show on WTBR. It airs every Friday at 8:30 in the morning. Stay tuned to learn all about the arts and culture scene for the city of Pittsfield and beyond. We hope you listen in every Friday at 8:30 on 89.7 FM WTBR.
Now, streaming live on the web, WTBRFM.com.
And we're back. For those just tuning in, this is Margaret Dixon on Page Turners reading The House on the Borderland by William Hope Hodgson. We're continuing the chapter called The Swine Things, where the protagonist is being attacked by basically large pig-like creatures. And we'll see what these pig-like creatures have to offer us. Taking the kitchen lamp down from its hook, I made my way from cellar to cellar and room to room, through pantry and coal hole, along passages, and into the 101 little blind alleys and hidden nooks that formed the basement of the old house. Then, when I knew I had been in every corner and cranny large enough to conceal aught of any size, I made my way up the stairs. With my foot on the first step, I paused. It seemed to me I heard a movement, apparently from the buttery, which is to the left of the staircase. It had been one of the first places I searched, and yet I felt certain my eyes had not deceived me. My nerves were strung now, and with hardly any hesitation, I stepped up to the door, holding the lamp above my head. In a glance, I saw that the place was empty, save for the heavy stone slab supported by brick pillars, and I was about to leave it, convinced that I had been mistaken, when, in turning, my light was flashed back from two bright spots outside the window and high up. For a few moments, I stood there staring. Then they moved, revolving slowly and throwing out alternate scintillations of green and red. At least so it appeared to me. I knew then that they were eyes. Slowly, I traced the shadowy outline of one of the things. It appeared to be holding on to the bars of the window, and its attitude suggested climbing. I went nearer to the window and held the light higher. There was no need to be afraid of the creature. The bars were strong, and there was little danger of its being able to move them. And then suddenly, in spite of the knowledge that the brute could not reach to harm me, I had a return of the horrible sensation of fear that had assailed me on that night a week previously. It was the same feeling of helpless, shuddering fright. I realized dimly that the creature's eyes were looking into mine with a steady, compelling stare. I tried to turn away, but could not. I seemed now to see the window through a mist. Then I thought other eyes came and peered, and yet others, until a whole galaxy of malignant, staring orbs seemed to hold me in thrall. My head began to swim and throb violently. Then I was aware of feeling of acute physical pain in my left hand. It grew more severe and forced, literally forced, my attention. With a tremendous effort, I glanced down, and with that, the spell that had held me was broken. I realized then that I had, in my agitation, unconsciously caught hold of the hot lamp glass and burnt my hand badly. I looked up to the window again. The misty appearance had gone, and now I saw that it was crowded with dozens of bestial faces. With a sudden access of rage, I raised the lamp and hurled it full at the window. It struck the glass, smashing a pane, and passed between two of the bars out into the garden, scattering burning oil as it went. I heard several loud cries of pain, and as my sight became accustomed to the dark, I discovered that the creatures had left the window. Pulling myself together, I groped for the door, and having found it, made my way upstairs, stumbling at each step. I felt dazed, as though I had received a blow on the head. At the same time, my hand smarted badly, and I was full of a nervous, dull rage against those things. Reaching my study, I lit the candles. As they burnt up, their rays were reflected from the rack of firearms on the side wall. At the sight, I remembered that I had there a power which, as I had proved earlier, seemed as fatal to those monsters as to more ordinary animals, and I determined I would take the offensive. First of all, I bound up my hand, for the pain was fast becoming intolerable. After that, it seemed easier, and I crossed the room to the rifle stand. There I selected a heavy rifle, an old and tried weapon, and having procured ammunition, I made my way up into one of the small towers with which the house is crowned. From there, I found that I could see nothing. The gardens presented a dim blur of shadows, a little blacker perhaps where the trees stood. That was all, and I knew that it was useless to shoot down into all that darkness. The only thing to be done was to wait for the moon to rise. Then I might be able to do a little execution. In the meantime, I sat still and kept my ears open. The gardens were comparatively quiet now, and only an occasional grunt or squeal came up to me. I did not like this silence. It made me wonder on what devilry the creatures were bent. Twice I left the tower and took a walk through the house, but everything was silent. Once I heard a noise from the direction of the pit, as though more earth had fallen. Following this, and lasting for some 15 minutes, there was a commotion among the denizens of the gardens. This died away, and after that, all was again quiet. About an hour later, the moon's light showed above the distant horizon. From where I sat, I could see it over the trees, but it was not until it rose clear of them that I could make out any of the details in the gardens below. Even then, I could see none of the brutes, until, happening to crane forward, I saw several of them lying prone up against the wall of the house. What they were doing, I could not make out. It was, however, a chance too good to be ignored, and taking aim, I fired at the one directly beneath. There was a shrill scream, and as the smoke cleared away, I saw that it had turned on its back and was writhing feebly. Then it was quiet. The others had disappeared. Immediately after this, I heard a loud squeal in the direction of the pit. It was answered 100 times from every part of the garden. This gave me some notion of the number of the creatures, and I began to feel the whole affair was becoming even more serious than I had imagined. As I sat there silent and watchful, the thought came to me, why was all this? What were those things? What did it mean? Then my thoughts flew back to that vision, though even now I doubt whether it was a vision, of the plain of silence. What did that mean? I wondered, and that thing in the arena? Ugh! Lastly, I thought of the house I had seen in that faraway place. That house so like this in every detail of external structure that it might have been modeled from it. Or this from that. I had never thought of that. At this moment, there came another long squeal from the pit, followed a second later by a couple of shorter ones. At once the garden was filled with answering cries. I stood up quickly and looked over the parapet. In the moonlight, it seemed as though the shrubberies were alive. They tossed hither and thither as though shaken by a strong, irregular wind, while a continuous rustling and a noise of scampering feet rose up to me. Several times I saw the moonlight gleam on running white figures among the bushes, and twice I fired. The second time, my shot was answered by a short squeal of pain. A minute later, the gardens lay silent. From the pit came a deep, hoarse babble of swine talk. At times, angry cries smote the air, and they would be answered by multitudinous gruntings. It occurred to me that they were holding some kind of a council, perhaps to discuss the problem of entering the house. Also, I thought that they seemed much enraged, probably by my successful shots. It occurred to me that now would be a good time to make a final survey of our defenses. This I proceeded to do at once, visiting the whole of the basement again and examining each of the doors. Luckily, they are all, like the back one, built of solid iron-studded oak. Then I went upstairs to the study. I was more anxious about this door. It is, palpably, of a more modern make than the others, and though a stout piece of work, it has little of their ponderous strength. I must explain here that there is a small raised lawn on this side of the house upon which this door opens, the windows of the study being barred on this account. All the other entrances, excepting the great gateway which is never opened, are in the lower story. The attack. I spent some time puzzling how to strengthen the study door. Finally, I went down to the kitchen and with some trouble brought up several heavy pieces of timber. These I wedged up slantwise against it from the floor, nailing them top and bottom. For half an hour I worked hard, and at last got it shored to my mind. Then, feeling easier, I resumed my coat, which I had laid aside, and proceeded to attend to one or two matters before returning to the tower. It was whilst thus employed that I heard a fumbling at the door, and the latch was tried. Keeping silence, I waited. Soon I heard several of the creatures outside. They were grunting to one another, softly. Then, for a minute, there was quietness. Suddenly there sounded a quick, low grunt, and the door creaked under a tremendous pressure. It would have burst inwards, but for the supports I had placed. The strain ceased as quickly as it had begun, and there was more talk. Presently, one of the things squealed softly, and I heard the sound of others approaching. There was a short confabulation, then again silence, and I realized that they had called several more to assist. Feeling that now was the supreme moment, I stood ready with my rifle presented. If the door gave, I would at least slay as many as possible. Again came the low signal, and once more the door cracked under a huge force. For a minute, perhaps, the pressure was kept up, and I waited nervously, expecting each moment to see the door come down with a crash. But no, the struts held, and the attempt proved abortive. Then followed more of their horrible, grunting talk, and whilst it lasted, I thought I distinguished the noise of fresh arrivals. After a long discussion, during which the door was several times shaken, they became quiet once more, and I knew that they were going to make a third attempt to break it down. I was almost in despair. The props had been severely tried in the two previous attacks, and I was sorely afraid that this would prove too much for them. At that moment, like an inspiration, a thought flashed into my troubled brain. Instantly, for it was no time to hesitate, I ran from the room and up stair after stair. This time it was not to one of the towers that I went, but out onto the flat, leaded roof itself. Once there, I raced across to the parapet that walls it round and looked down. As I did so, I heard the short, grunted signal, and even up there caught the crying of the door under the assault. There was not a moment to lose, and leaning over, I aimed quickly and fired. The rapport rang sharply, and almost blending with it came the loud splud of the bullet striking its mark. From below rose a shrill wail, and the door ceased its groaning. Then, as I took my weight from off the parapet, a huge piece of the stone coping slid from under me and fell with a crash among the disorganized throng beneath. Several horrible shrieks quavered through the night air, and then I heard a sound of scampering feet. Cautiously, I looked over. In the moonlight, I could see the great coping stone lying right across the threshold of the door. I thought I saw something under it. Several things, white, but I could not be sure. And so a few minutes passed. As I stared, I saw something come round out of the shadow of the house. It was one of the things. It went up to the stone silently and bent down. I was unable to see what it did. In a moment, it stood up. It had something in its talons, which it put to its mouth and tore at. For the moment, I did not realize. Then slowly, I comprehended. The thing was stooping again. It was horrible. I started to load my rifle. When I looked again, the monster was tugging at the stone, moving it to one side. I leant the rifle on the coping and pulled the trigger. The brute collapsed on its face and kicked slightly. Simultaneously, almost with the rapport, I heard another sound, that of breaking glass. Waiting only to recharge my weapon, I ran from the roof and down the first two flights of stairs. Here I paused to listen. As I did so, there came another tinkle of falling glass. It appeared to come from the floor below. Excitedly, I sprang down the steps and, guided by the rattle of the window sash, reached the door of one of the empty bedrooms at the back of the house. I thrust it open. The room was but dimly illuminated by the moonlight, most of the light being blotted out by moving figures at the window. Even as I stood, one crawled through into the room. Leveling my weapon, I fired point blank at it. filling the room with a deafening bane. When the smoke cleared, I saw the room was empty and the window free. The room was much lighter. The night air blew in coldly through the shattered panes. Down below in the night, I could hear a soft moaning and a confused murmur of swine voices. Stepping to one side of the window, I reloaded and then stood there waiting. Presently, I heard a scuffling noise. From where I stood in the shadow, I could see without being seen. Nearer came the sounds, and then I saw something come up above the sill and clutch at the broken window frame. It caught a piece of the woodwork, and now I could make out that it was a hand and arm. A moment later, the face of one of the swine creatures rose into view. Then, before I could use my rifle or do anything, there came a sharp crack, and the window frame gave way under the weight of the thing. Next instant, a squashing thud and a loud outcry told me that it had fallen to the ground. With a savage hope that it had been killed, I went to the window. The moon had gone behind a cloud so that I could see nothing, though a steady hum of jabbering just beneath where I stood indicated that there were several more of the brutes close at hand. As I stood there looking down, I marveled how it had been possible for the creature to climb so far. For the wall is comparatively smooth, while the distance to the ground must be at least 80 feet. All at once, as I bent peering, I saw something indistinctly that cut the gray shadow of the house side with a black line. It passed the window to the left at a distance of about 2 feet. Then I remembered that it was a gutter pipe that had been put there some years ago to carry off the rainwater. I had forgotten about it. I could see now how the creatures had managed to reach the window. Even as the solution came to me, I heard a faint slithering, scratching noise and knew that another of the brutes was coming. I waited some odd moments, then leant out the window and felt the pipe. To my delight, I found that it was quite loose, and I managed, using the rifle barrel as a crowbar, to lever it out from the wall. I worked quickly, then, taking hold with both hands, I wrenched the whole concern away and hurled it down, with the thing still clinging to it, into the garden. For a few minutes longer, I waited there listening, but after the first general outcry, I heard nothing. I knew now that there was no more reason to fear an attack from this quarter. I had removed the only means of reaching the window, and, as none of the other windows had any adjacent water pipes to tempt the climbing powers of the monsters, I began to feel more confident of escaping their clutches. Leaving the room, I made my way down to the study. I was anxious to see how the door had withstood the test of that last assault. Entering, I lit two of the candles and then turned to the door. One of the large props had been displaced, and on that side, the door had been forced inward some 6 inches. It was providential that I had managed to drive the brutes away just when I did. And that coping stone! I wondered vaguely how I had managed to dislodge it. I had not noticed it loose as I took my shot, and then as I stood up, it had slipped away from beneath me. I felt that I owed the dismissal of the attacking force more to its timely fall than to my rifle. Then the thought came that I had better seize this chance to shore up the door again. It was evident the creatures had not returned since the fall of the coping stone, but who was to say how long they would keep away? There and then I set to repairing the door, working hard and anxiously. First I went down to the basement and, rummaging round, found several pieces of heavy oak planking. With these, I returned to the study, and having removed the props, placed the planks up against the door. Then I nailed the heads of the struts to these, and driving them well home at the bottoms, nailed them again there. Thus I made the door stronger than ever, for now it was solid with the backing of boards, and would, I felt convinced, stand a heavier pressure than hitherto without giving way. After that, I lit the lamp which I had brought from the kitchen and went down to have a look at the lower windows. Now that I had seen an instance of the strength the creatures possessed, I felt considerable anxiety about the windows on the ground floor, in spite of the fact they were so strongly barred. I went first to the buttery, having a vivid remembrance of my late adventure there. The place was chilly, and the wind, soughing in through the broken glass, produced an eerie note. Apart from the general air of dismalness, the place was as I had left it the night before. Going up to the window, I examined the bars closely, noting as I did so their comfortable thickness. Still, as I looked more intently, it seemed to me the middle bar was bent slightly from the straight. Yet it was but trifling, and it might have been so for years. I had never before noticed them particularly. I put my hand through the broken window and shook the bar. It was as firm as a rock. Perhaps the creature had tried to start it, and finding it beyond their power, ceased from the effort. After that, I went round to each of the windows in turn, examining them with careful attention, but nowhere else could I trace anything to show there had been any tampering. Having finished my survey, I went back to the study and poured myself out a little brandy, then to the tower to watch. Well, that was certainly terrifying. Let's see how long this poor guy can keep up his defense against these weird pig things. Well, we'll see what happens to him next time on Page Turners. This is Margaret Dixon. I enjoyed reading to you, and I hope you enjoyed listening.